Hey, I want to call to order the regular Benton County Board Meeting of Commissioners, Tuesday, February 6, 2024. If you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next, if we can have approval of the January 30th meeting minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve January 30th, 2024 meeting minutes.
Second. I'll second it. Commissioner Alvarez, he's still muted. I'll second it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes. You said there's something to add on the agenda under other business?
Yeah, we'd like to add a authorization for relocation expenses from the PA's office.
Okay. Okay. Anything else? That's it?
That's it.
Okay. With that, Amanda, if you'll play this deal.
The purpose of the comment period is to give the audience an opportunity to provide comments to commissioners regarding agenda items or other topics. It is an official on-the-record communication geared toward giving information and opinions to consider in the decision-making process. While the commissioners welcome hearing from you, please note that the public comment period is not an opportunity for dialogue with commissioners or for posing questions with the expectation of an immediate answer. Many questions require an opportunity for information gathering and deliberation. For this reason, the commissioners will accept comments, but will not directly respond to comments, questions, or concerns raised during the public comment period. Audience members who wish to speak should raise your hand to be called upon by the chairman, or virtual participants use the raise hand feature. Come to the podium, or virtual participants unmute your microphone when called upon. State your name and address for the record. And after speaking, write your name and address on the record sheet. Virtual participants do not complete this step. To allow every participant an opportunity to be heard, public comments will be limited to 3 minutes per speaker. The chairman will indicate when your allowed time has elapsed. In the interest of running an orderly meeting, we ask that you do not duplicate comments made by a previous speaker. Instead, please simply confirm your agreement with previous statements. When appropriate, the commissioners may refer an item identified during public comments to the county administrator for further action. Please note that if a speaker intends to give commissioners any records of any kind as a part of a presentation, the records must be handed directly to the clerk of the board for distribution.
Okay, thank you. First, we'll start here in Prosser, and we have Mr. Atkins. Come forward, state your name and your address for the record, please.
Yes, sir. My name is Jim Atkins, and I'm Prosser, Washington. I had several items to talk to about today. Is one, I've said it before, can we extend it from 3 minutes to 5 minutes? As I stated previously, you don't talk to your wife or kids for 3 minutes or 5 minutes in a week. Let's go to the commissioner's agenda sheets, page 62. Amanda Pearson filled this one out. She did a great job of putting down the names on the chairman's signature sheets where you know who's going to sign. Nicole Webb, she did the same thing. Good job there. Alex Garcia on page 70-73, no names on that just titles. Same thing, William Leach, they did one, same thing. That's page 67, none. Great. Rosa Garcia, great job with acronyms. This one right here, inner page 80-81, has several acronyms, and she spelled out what they were before she put the acronym down. And she put the acronym in parentheses, and that's the correct way to do it. So, and you might also want to use these names as training. You can, okay, here's the people we need to train to learn how to do this stuff correctly. You know, same thing on page 89, 90, no names, 92, 93, no names on the signature. Here's Michelle Morales. This is RFP for health agency for SUD. Use the acronyms without spelling them out, and no printed names on the signature line. Here's Eric Eisinger. This is regarding the child forensic interviewer. Says Ms. Merstig has a master's degree. Master's degree in what? English, math, what? You know, I mean, we shouldn't have to understand or assume what they have a master's degree in, especially for that position right there. The road department requesting to purchase two new dump trucks. And they say the equipment 563 and 565 need to be replaced. Doesn't say what kind of dump trucks they are, the size of the dump trucks, the mileage, the age, et cetera. And these dump trucks is only for, this dump truck purchase is only for chassis. So are they gonna take the old dump bed off and put it on these trucks, or are they gonna come back later and wanna buy a new dump bed for these trucks? That's a question somebody should be asking. And then that's all I have today.
You're not looking for a dump truck, are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're working on it. Anyone in Kennewick? Can you see anyone, Will? Yeah.
There's someone coming up.
There is someone coming up.
Good morning. Not sure if this is working. Tina Gregory, yeah. Kennewick.
Yeah, we can hear you, Tina. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, thank you for your thoroughness. You're a great citizen. We pledge an allegiance to our flag, one nation under God, yet he is banned from everywhere. Each one of you in this room need to evaluate where our country will be in 10 years. I can guarantee it will not be in climate disaster. Maybe in slavery to dictators that want us to own nothing and eat bugs. You know, coffee is even bad for the environment. It's time we actually follow the science and we abolish the WEF, WHO, CIA, FBI, CIA, FDA. Let's have smaller government. I wonder how many of you have actually sworn to uphold our Constitution. Has our sheriff, mayor, governor, senator? How about our president? We are finding out that many of these people haven't. As a matter of public record, they won't. I don't understand how they can hold these offices if they don't follow the law of our land. Right now, our county wants to push face recognition. Where is our right to privacy? Our borders are wide open. Taxpayers flipping the bill for them to come in here illegally. They are trafficked by our own government. Yet taxpayers are losing their businesses, homes, and livelihoods over these tyrannical dictator leaders. Washington State allocated $460 million to these illegal immigrants. $340 million of that was so-called stimulus for we the people of the COVID stuff, the COVID lie. When are we, the people, going to stand up? We know without doubt that the January 6th was a lie, yet people are still being arrested today. No speedy trials. Prison for people being escorted into a building by police. We actually have many being sentenced to 11 years for prison for singing and praying at an abortion clinic. Yet you can come here illegally, be paid, beat up our officers, steal, kill, and destroy, yet walk away. When are we the people going to stand up? It all starts locally. It's the time our country, our county commissioners, sheriffs, mayors, school board, and even librarians stand up for we the people. It's time we teach the Bill of Rights and Constitution in our schools and government offices. You all work for we the people. We are not your slaves. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. He is our refuge and our fortress. He will deliver us from the snare of the evil one. I'd like to see what we're going to do locally. It'd be nice if, you know, we could start holding our government accountable. Thank you for this time.
Thank you. Is there someone online?
There might be
one more. Yeah. Oh, okay. Go ahead, sir. Please state your name and address.
Ismael Mendoza, Finley, Washington. And I guess I just want to talk about something that is affecting the Finley community. So good morning. My name is Ismael Mendoza Jimenez, and I have been in Finley since 2011. I'm here to ask our Board of Commissioners to please let me know what can we do as a community to improve the quality of service that people of Finley are receiving from the Benton County Sheriff's Office. I personally have been in need of help from our law enforcement, but in many occasions, I'm not able to get it because by the time they show, the perpetrator has already left and nothing happens. Sometimes when I ask for help, I just get dismissed with just a phone call. And in some occasions, when they happen to show 30 minutes to 1 hour later, they do not provide the services that we expect. And in all honesty, this is a disgrace and a disservice to our community of Finley. And sadly, I'm not alone. Unfortunately, this seems to be the norm. Last week, my neighbor's granddaughter was home alone, and she could clearly hear someone trying to open her house. When she called the sheriff's office, they couldn't make it to the property until about an hour later. She told me that her husband, who works in Connell, which is about 45 miles from Finley, was able to come back home before the sheriff's deputies were able to make it to her house. And you can only imagine how helpless she felt while home alone. Unfortunately, this experience is common for the people of Finley. I'm also a member of the Real Finley Facebook page, and lots of people have shared the very same frustration. Honestly, I was under the impression that it was because I'm brown, but unfortunately, this happened too often in our community and to everyone. Unfortunately, it's not just me. I was under the impression that we have two deputies for the Finley area, but today around 2 a.m., because I had to make a phone call because there was a perpetrator at my house, I learned that there's only one. And to make matters worse, we share it with the Riata Row area. And to me, this does not make any sense. Our community is growing at a very fast pace, and the Benton County Sheriff is not providing the people of Finley the protection and service that we deserve. I suggest adding a substation to our area to reduce the amount of time our community has to wait for a deputy to arrive at the scene. Please help us. We deserve to feel safe and secure to enjoy the blessings of liberty that our founding fathers had envisioned. I would like to read from the Federalist Papers 51, where it says, if angels were to govern men, neither external or internal controls on government will be necessary, but they're necessary. And off topic, the previous speaker mentioned that illegal immigrants get money, and that is not a fact. And January 6th was a disgrace for the whole country. And you know who the victim is? The whole American nation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in Kennewick or Prosser? Anyone online? You'll raise your hand. Don't see anyone. Okay. Don't see anyone.
And then Chairman Delvin, they were able to unmute me. I couldn't unmute myself. I just want to let you know I'm back on. I'm online, but we just had some technical difficulties, so I'm good to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Next, we'll have motion for the consent agenda, please.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda items A through O, but I'd like to pull item N.
Okay, yeah. Where's that coming from? Can you move?
I'll second that.
Thank you. You'll second that? Thank you, Commissioner Alvarez. With that, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you. Scheduled business. First, 2024 Benton County Economic Development Plan, Mr. File.
Good morning, everyone. Good
morning.
Good morning. This is a keep it pretty brief, as I'm sure you'll appreciate. The document that we're talking about. I've had it out for a review. I've got some great comments from a few of the departments. It's on the website. Happy to discuss at length either now or with anyone who wants to at a separate time. Basically, economic development plan sort of mirrors what we have in the economic element in the comprehensive plan, goes into a little more depth. And we generally use this to articulate our basic approach to economic development and also catalog certain projects and programs and funds that we have. One of the important aspects of it, kind of like with the six-year transportation plan or with even the parks plan, a new one you'll see in a few weeks as well, is that having the economic development plan on record keeps us eligible for certain grants, usually at the state level. Particularly pertinent for us is the rural county capital fund projects. And you're going to hear one about one of those in a moment. We have to have those either in a city or county economic plan or comp plan. And that also applies to the port projects. And so the port's own plans do not meet the state statute. So we need to document those in our plan. And that's what this document does. It is possible, if not likely, that even though I would normally want to update this on an annual or biannual basis, if we get more projects from the ports, then we update it at that time so that they show. So for example, the port project that I'm about to share with you in a moment is already in this draft plan. So we've already got that covered. Sections in the plan are, it's kind of broken out into a section on funding, section on partnerships, county's organization, and then probably most importantly at the end is that described as some of the projects we work on, notably rural county and the community development block grants. That's our presentation. Any questions?
You mentioned partnerships. Who do we partner up with?
So we're talking about folks like TriDec, okay, and the Chamber of Commerce and the Benton City Group.
And the COG.
CROG.
Yeah, okay.
So just kind of a little section talking about each of those groups and how we relate to them, how we work with them.
Questions. Commissioner Alvarez, any questions?
Nope, good to go. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move for adoption of the 2024 Benton County Economic Development Plan.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. And next, you're up.
Okay, so the space grows a little more between our rural county projects. If you remember back a few years ago, we used to get them pretty frequently, and now they're spaced out a little more. We have a new one from the Port of Benton. One of the ways we'll keep them spaced out as well is that we're going to a quarterly review process. I think I articulated that in an email a while back. So just once per quarter, if any applications come in, we'll review those and we'll handle them all at once rather than on a rolling basis. So this new project with the port, I like this one. And I think it's a good project, but one of the reasons I like it is it's gonna be unique in that it'll just be kind of a one and done with this. So in the past, most of our projects have been supporting the construction of something. In this case, the Port of Benton is looking to buy a property that is immediately south of their headquarters in North Richland. There's a 47,000 square foot, currently abandoned, building, and they're looking to rehabilitate that building and use it for a number of purposes. And I think you would have seen some of what they have in mind in their application, which was attached. So this is our helping them to the tune of $1.5 million to buy that building, which is assessed at about $2.5 million. Kind of like buying and repurposing an old hospital that you might do. In this case, they're taking one of the old Sigma complex buildings in North Richland to do that. On top of that, the port has plans for about $800,000 of work and renovation on that building. They want to sort of divide each of the two floors into four sections, and each of those would be a little different for the different types of office and research and development type of functions that they foresee out there. So in this case, from my point of view, I don't have to manage a lot of progress payments or delays or amending contracts. They're ready to go on this right now. Send us one bill for $1.5 million, and they're ready to get into that building and get working on it right now. building is in good shape. It's being maintained, but it's also not performing any useful function. So that's this project. Any questions about that?
No, that's the old federal company.
Yes.
Bill Lamson was involved.
That's right. There's been nothing going on there for about four years. Yeah.
They shut down.
I got a couple of questions. So with the 1.5, is it, this is an investment on the county side where it'll be receiving revenue?
No.
No.
No. This is them using the port, using their allocation of rural county, and they're leveraging some of their own funds with that. So we are giving them money to buy this building, and they will put it to use.
Okay. So we don't get that money, like we don't have partnership or anything.
No, we're not, no equity in more.
Okay. But it's in our budget though?
Yes.
Okay. The old 9 months.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, sir. Okay.
Commissioner Alvarez, any comments or questions?
No, nope, not at all.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move for the disbursement of the rural county capital funds to the Port of Benton for the 3110 Innovation Center project in the amount of $1.5 million, and for signing of the disbursement agreement by the chair or his designee that will put this action into force.
Second.
Yeah, okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, next, Adam. We have. Is Josie there?
Yeah, she's coming up.
She's coming up?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning. Go ahead.
So on the agenda today is the amendment one to the interagency agreement with the Administrative Office of the Courts. The prosecutor's office didn't sign off on this mainly because of how AOC amended the original contract. What they were trying to do is just include language that they would also reimburse the clerk's office for the time that we spend for processing cases regarding State v. Blake. But quite frankly, they didn't do a very good job of amending the contract, and they left out pieces of it that they said they did intentionally, but the entire contract that we originally signed in 23 is still in effect with these amendments adding the clerk's office reimbursement to the contract. So I'm just here asking that you sign this new contract. This is so we can continue to get reimbursed for all of the work that the offices do on processing cases on State v. Blake.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Alvarez, any question?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve Amendment 1, Interagency Agreement IAA 24004 with the Administration Office of the Courts.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's annoying, that mic. Next, MOU with Marshals. Memorandum of Understanding with the Marshals. Do we have anyone presenting? Okay.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Go ahead.
So this is a, I guess, a memorandum of understanding between the Sheriff's Office and U.S. Marshals Service. The Sheriff's Office has a detective assigned to the U.S. Marshals. And this is for the Eastern District Regional Fugitive Task Force. The Sheriff's Office has had this detective assigned to this unit for the past, I would say, at least 10 years. In years past, the memorandum of understanding is that the marshals would reimburse the sheriff's office for any overtime incurred during their missions. Typically this MOU is usually forwarded to us or sent to the sheriff's office for authorization or signature in October this year. And this is for fiscal year 2023 through 2024. This year, it took the U.S. Marshal's office a little longer to secure funding, and therefore we received it probably within the last week or so. So they have authorized to reimburse the sheriff's office a sum of $21,901 towards overtime for the fiscal year of 2023-2024. So the recommendation is for the U.S. for the Board of Commissioners to approve or authorize the sheriff's office to sign that MOU and forward it back to the U.S. Marshals Service.
Okay, any question?
So, Ms. Cantu, with the $21,000, is this money that the county has already spent, or is this for the 2024 year?
It would be for the 2024 year. No, the sheriff's office has not spent. That would be for the 2023-2024 fiscal year, October to October.
I guess just with the public comment that we had earlier, you know, in Finley and stuff, I'm kind of concerned about this because, to me, the U.S. Marshals should have their own staff and everything, and to where the sheriff's department should be focusing on our rural areas and being more responsive than going to with the marshal's office. I mean, I get when we had Fred Meyer a couple of years ago, you know, all hands on deck, but I don't know. I've just got a small concern about that with us focusing with U.S. Marshals versus, you know, going out to Finley and being more responsive, or going out to Burbank or not Burbank, I'm sorry, Benton City, you know, those areas.
No, those are legitimate concerns. And obviously we have personnel that are assigned through their zones. The U.S. Marshals detective has their it's a task force. Basically, their mission is to effect arrest on fugitives that are Benton County that are, for lack of a better word, basically on the run. These are fugitives that are violent offenders that have committed either murders, serious assaults, etc. So this is what this task force mission is. The sheriff's office has had a detective committed to this task force for, I'm going to say, at least 10 years. And definitely the comment earlier was well noted. We have personnel assigned to different zones of the county to respond to these any type of event. Understanding that this is the sheriff's office, it's a county, and sometimes you may not be at a specific location when the need is. We prioritize on calls, we respond to all calls, and you know, that's what I can say about that. This is totally separate that we've had this detective assigned, just like we have detectives assigned to other our detective division to focus on violent felonies and violent crimes. That's what this detective's mission is. This is nothing new. That we've had. This is just a continuation, and they do a phenomenal job in bringing fugitives to justice, to face the courts for what they've committed.
I got one more question.
Go ahead.
I guess my other question too is like, I don't know, 2012, 2010, you know, we had the detective or sheriff go out to Indian Reservation with the U.S. Marshals, and wasn't there like a liability lawsuit or something like that happened? I guess it just brings up more concern for me on the liability side with the sheriff's department involved with the marshals and then the counties having to pay for a lawsuit or, you know, vehicle getting wrecked or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, Commissioner Alvarez, anything?
So, going to what Commissioner McKay said, so was this the one that Jeff brought to us? I can't remember, a few weeks ago, in reference to some concerns.
Yeah.
This is a different issue altogether.
All
right, so then I have some concerns too. And I do have a question for Commander Cantu. And I know, Commander, you know I respect you totally 100%. But when I hear concerns in reference to the rural areas, whether it's Benton City, outside of Prosser or Finley, and we're funding that, and we're funding the staff levels of deputies to patrol those areas. You know, I think maybe if you could go back to the sheriff and maybe have a presentation to us that shows what zones and how many deputies actually are patrolling those zones during, whether it's during a day shift, graveyard shift, or swing shift, and see where everybody's at. I'd like to know that myself, because the thing now that we got the public safety sales tax done, that keeps us flush. It didn't change anything. But my whole goal is, and I talked about this in the Law and Justice Council, I know you've been to some of those meetings, is how we can rebuild a better, robust public safety system working with all our partners within the cities. We all have, all the cities have their own police department except for Benton City. And I know, you know, that there's overlays where they all these taxpayers pay money with those cities for those police departments to keep them safe and respond to calls. The sheriff's office, typically, I've seen historically, and I'm not talking Benton County, have always done more of the rural areas. And so where's that overlapping? Do we have too much overlapping within the cities of the county where those cities can go ahead and do their own law enforcement, where they have plenty of people to do that? And so there's too much overlapping and not enough service out in those areas that may need that, because I certainly want to have my wife or anybody else's wife or brother, sister, father, you know, have an invasion because we couldn't respond in time. So I would maybe recommend that the sheriff's office, as we do this funding and we're trying to reallocate money, is maybe, you know, show us where those weak spots or anything that we can do to enhance, or the sheriff can go enhance it. Like I said, the overlapping may be a little bit too much. I don't know, but that'd be something I'd like to go ahead and see myself. I do have concerns on that, especially when we have one of our civil attorneys where we are potentially exposed to potential liability where the federal government did not want to take responsibility for that. So I'm with the, I have the same concerns as Commissioner McKay does, and I'll yield that back to you, Chairman.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Alvarez. Commander, can you clarify, you said that the detective assigned to this task force only operates within the county when the task force is in the county operating? Is that what is that what I'm understanding?
Well, they their responsibility is Eastern Washington. So they may be called to another, to Franklin County. They may be called to Walla Walla. They may be called to assist. Now, this task force is not the only task force that the U.S. Marshal's Office has throughout the state. However, if they need resources to whatever the mission may be, to whatever offender is being sought or offenders is being sought, for instance, Yakima or Walla Walla or, you know, Kennewick or Richland, Benton City, Prosser, that would be addressed. They obviously, we the Sheriff's Office has this detective assigned to this, so they obviously, they focus, if there is an individual that needs to, there is a felony warrant out for a violent crime in Benton County, that's going to be their priority. And obviously they pull the resources like all law enforcement agencies do. So no, Benton County is not the only place that they would, you know, that they would work under. But if a case comes where it's a Benton County case, that would be their focus and their priority.
Okay, so they do move about with this task force. Is it just strictly violent offenders, or do they? Because the case that Commissioner Alvarez brought up was brought up by our civil division of the prosecutor's office about an incident that happened where a deputy was at a tobacco, I guess for lack of a better, was at a tobacco raid on the Indian reservation, and our deputy was there, and that's what the lawsuit came about from. I guess our deputy was just there, but they were named in the lawsuit. So does this task force do more than just violent offenders, you know?
There, and you're apt to clarify that. I am familiar a little bit with that incident back in either 2012 or 13. They did an operation in the Yakima Indian Reservation. I don't remember exactly what the details were of the warrant. Our detective was there. Since that event, they have not, I guess they revamped their operating procedures and no longer are part of that. There is other offenses that they, you know, offenders that they would be after, such as, you know, sex offenders that, high-risk sex offenders that are on the run, if you will. They focus on those serious crimes, violent crimes, et cetera. So it's homicide suspects are you know, felony assault suspects that are on the run. That's their priority.
And Chairman Delvin, I have one more question when you're done.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
So just so the public understands this too, and why I think the concern is on our side, we're making this call, whether we approve it or not, is that when that deputy was there or present, and there was a lawsuit, and it could have been a multi-million dollar lawsuit, right? Potentially, the federal government or the U.S. Marshal's Office, from what I was reading, would not put us under their umbrella for, to protect us for liability. We would have to defend that ourselves as the county, which could have put millions of dollars of burden on the taxpayers if we were sued and they were successful. That's the concern. I think that's a concern that we're all looking at, and that's where the civil department from the prosecutor's office, when we read that, was, hey, we put someone on there, there's some type of liability. Is the federal government going to protect Benton County and its residents from a multi-million dollar lawsuit? We have exposure there. And I think that was a concern where that civil attorney was bringing up to us. And I know we have a county prosecutor there as well. I don't know if he has any questions or concerns that he could bring up to us and enlighten us on that. But I think that's my biggest one. We put someone on there, they're doing a good thing, but at the same time, we're not protected. we're kind of hanging out there in the wind if something does happen, and they're not going to protect us when it comes to the liability side. Is that how you guys feel? I don't know. That's what I kind of got out of that letter.
Yeah, I would agree. It doesn't. The paperwork submitted on this is just basically the payment obligation document. Yep. So it doesn't give the details. There's no details of MOU. I don't know if you have a separate one that has been signed. This just looks like reimbursement language and doesn't really have understanding about liabilities and such. Do you know that, Commander? There's a separate document out there?
I am not certain on whether there's a separate document as far as the understanding or the MOU. I don't, and I apologize for that.
Okay.
Commissioner, there is a separate MOU.
There is a separate? Oh, okay. Has that been approved before?
I don't know the current status of
it. Oh, you don't know. Okay. You can look on that. So this is just authorizing the Sheriff's Department for reimbursement for overtime is what this is.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have to go ahead and at least, in my opinion, probably approve this for the overtime since it's still in running and it's still active. But when it comes up to renewal of potentially having someone on there, maybe that's when we look at this and ask more questions. That's my personal opinion.
I would agree.
So that's what I'm saying. So it's already second in line.
And, right. Okay. Yeah, this is just for the reimbursement.
Yeah, so
this doesn't actually approve the regular MOU.
Okay. So, Mr. Cantu, I guess if you could just make sure that communicate to you seeing the liability on, I hope you understand where I'm coming from on the liability side, let's stay in Benton County. You know, all the other counties have their own sheriff's departments and contacts and detectives and stuff. It's just, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
Okay. Yeah, because like, especially when we sent that one detective out to the Indian reservation stuff, a while back, that's a tough one too. So, okay.
Maybe, Commander, if you can get us a copy of that MOU or see what the status of that, the actual MOU on the operations part of that task force.
Okay.
Would help. Okay. Because this just looks like it. This is just a form obligating to participate and receive the monies. So it doesn't actually have, the actual MOU.
Correct. This is just for the reimbursement of the overtime.
Go ahead, Mr. Alvarez.
Thank you. And Commander Cantu, sorry if you feel like you're on the hot seat. It had nothing to do with that whatsoever. I think we just received that letter and we read through it. And we're just doing our homework. We're making sure that we're kind of giving you a temperature check of some of those things. We just want to make sure we're being, we're respecting our taxpayers and we're making sure we're doing the right thing on behalf of Benton County residents. So I appreciate the time, appreciate the presentation. And now you kind of know where we kind of stand on that, where that letter, what we read, it was kind of concerning to us. We just want to make sure we're doing the right thing and at the same, appreciate the time.
Okay.
Okay. We get a motion then?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I move to approve the memorandum of understanding for the joint law enforcement operations task force between Benton County Sheriff's Office and U.S. Marshals Eastern District of Washington for reimbursement to Benton County for an amount of $21,901 for the period of October 24th, 2023 to September 30th, 2024.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. What was that?
He said aye.
He said aye.
I said aye.
Yeah, yeah, there's a little delay there. So sorry, I covered over you. With that, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have the child forensic interview reclassification request.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Prosecutor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, in 2000, Benton County created a child forensic interviewer position. And for nearly 20 years, from 2000 to 2019, the child forensic interviewer was paid the same rate of pay as our entry-level prosecutors. And what we are asking here today is to maintain the same level of funding for the child forensic interviewer that we have historically had here in Benton County. This, as I'll explain in just a moment, this is an incredibly important position, not only for the county, but for all of the jurisdictions within Franklin, Benton and Franklin counties. And this position, unfortunately, has not kept pace with the job market. And as evidence of that, it is no longer a Fair Labor Standards Act or FLSA exempt position. And what I mean by that is that from 2000, when it was created, to 2023, this position was exempt from overtime pay. And as a result, any additional hours would not be chargeable to the county and the other jurisdictions. That changed as of January 1 of 2023, when it became subject to FLSA overtime. And as of that date, the county has been required to pay for additional overtime. And as you'll hear in just a moment, this position requires a lot of overtime and late hour work. So it's our position that this request should be granted because it matches the historical funding level for the position, because it's the right thing to do, and because the county will likely pay more for the position than if this request is granted. So first of all, let me explain a little bit about what the child forensic interviewer does. So the child forensic interviewer works at the Kids Haven program, which is located at SARC, the Support Advocacy Resource Center in Richland. Kids Haven is one of only four accredited child advocacy centers in all of Eastern Washington. And the child forensic interviewer plays a critical role in the child advocacy center. What happens is that the advocate or the child forensic interviewer is contacted typically by local law enforcement. There will be a disclosure typically of physical or sexual abuse committed against a child. That disclosure will be made either to CPS or directly to law enforcement. And then they will contact the child forensic interviewer to conduct an interview at a safe location that is not clinical and is a little more home-like and comfortable. The interviews are conducted in a location where there's couches, it's designed to help kids feel comfortable with the process of having a very difficult conversation about awful things with a stranger. The interviews typically last for an hour or more. They're attended by detectives who view remotely in a neighboring room. They're typically attended by prosecutors from our office. And one of the most important things that happens during the interview is the interview is recorded, and the recording itself becomes admissible evidence in a case that we prosecute that involves physical or sexual abuse of a child. There's a proceeding called 9A44. There's a hearing where the video itself can be played to a jury in lieu of or in addition to the testimony of the child in court. And that's significant because children in these situations are oftentimes subjected to incredible pressure from family members or for others to change their stories And that initial disclosure becomes one of the most important parts of our efforts to fight child physical and sexual abuse. The Child Forensic Interviewer is also a part of a multidisciplinary team that meets with advocates, meets with law enforcement prosecutors to discuss individual cases and to work through the process that they go through. They connect children with services, in other words, with counselors, with other physical needs that they may have. The Child Forensic Interviewer assists law enforcement. In fact, our interviewer, her cell phone number is regularly called, even during odd hours, by detectives from all over the Tri-Cities. And she works closely with prosecution, especially as we're making a charging decision and heading towards trial. It's important for you to know that she testifies as an expert witness in court. There are interviewing techniques that the child forensic interviewer is required to do it's mandated by state law. And those interview techniques are not known to just a normal detective because you're dealing with children who are dealing with developmental issues, who are uniquely susceptible to the possibility of influence. And the goal of the interviewer is to obtain the truth, to make the child feel comfortable as possible, to obtain truthful statements from the child about what exactly happened, and to not do that in a way that compromises the integrity of the investigation or the ability to prosecute the case. And that is only something that the child forensic interviewer is able to effectively do. And then finally, that child forensic interviewer is cross-examined by defense attorneys when they testify at trial. The qualifications for this position have developed over the course of time. When this position was first created in 2000, it was essentially a new type of position in local government. As things have progressed, this is a position that requires a master's degree at this point, a master's degree in social work. Our child forensic interviewer, Mari Merstig, is here with us today. She's seated in the front row. And she has occupied this position since the inception of the position in 2000. She's been doing this for approximately 23 years. I think it's important for the board to know a little bit about the burden of the position. During the course of the 2023 calendar year, Kids Haven conducted 285 interviews during that year. Now, there were 249 working days in the 2023 calendar year, so that means there was more than one interview per day. And that includes 52 children from Benton County, 12 from the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, 77 in Pasco, 49 in Prosser, 56 in West Richland, and additional numbers by other agencies for a total of 285. Having this job is incredibly important, but it requires the interviewer to sit down with a child and look them in the eyes and have a conversation about the worst of the worst, and to encourage the child to make a full disclosure of what happened. This is the day in, day out job of the child forensic interviewer, is to hear those types of disclosures from small children about the worst things that you can imagine. And as a result, this particular position faces something that only really detectives and the prosecutors who handle these types of positions have to deal with, which is the reality of secondary trauma, of sitting down with children to talk about the very worst of the worst. This particular position has what's called a child investigation agreement that was put into place some years ago. And I've included a copy of that in your packet. And the child investigation agreement indicates that this position serves all of the local agencies and jurisdictions. So Benton County, Franklin County, and all the cities within both counties. And in addition to that, There is what's called a jurisdiction allocation formula that provides that Benton County is responsible for paying 41% of the salary of this particular position, which means approximately 60% is borne by all the other jurisdictions. That jurisdiction allocation formula was based on population. And in addition to just the simple salary payments, SARC picks up most of the other costs. The child forensic interviewer is actually housed at Kids Haven instead of our office or at the Justice Center. And SARC pays for all the office equipment, the furniture, the recording equipment. They pay mileage, and significantly they pay for training costs, which can be quite a lot. As I said, unfortunately, the classification of the position has been outpaced by the job market. At the present, a normal CPS investigator is compensated at a higher rate of pay than the child forensic interviewer. With less experience and less responsibility, they do not have to testify as an expert witness. They do not have to generally testify in court in the same manner. In addition, this particular request, I think the board should take into consideration that, as I said, as of January 1, 2023, this position is subject to overtime. The work in this position drastically changes based on specific needs and based on responding to whatever the need happens to be. And let me explain what I mean. As I said before, all of local law enforcement has Mari Murstig's cell phone number. If an incident happens that involves a child in the middle of the night, she will respond. So for instance, the four-year-old who ingested fentanyl, she responded in the middle of the night. And that is understood to be a part of this position. The problem that creates is that there are also scheduled interviews in the following day or the following days that will still occur. So this is a position that is very dependent, that the hours put into the position are very dependent on whatever the current need is. And the instruction that I've given Ms. Murstig is that we're going to respond to whatever needs are present in the community, because she's able to perform a very unique function, which is to sit down with a child at a crime scene, sometimes very difficult homicide scenes, sex offense scenes, and have conversations that are key to law enforcement's efforts right at the time. So those overtime hours are due to scheduling late afternoon or evening interviews at the request of families because of wanting to keep a child in school, for instance. Nighttime calls from law enforcement to appear on scenes or at police departments or hospitals. There's extra hours that are put in for trial preparation. So testifying as an expert and being cross-examined requires Ms. Murstig to show up on the weekend and work with one of my prosecutors, Anita Petra, who is one of my senior prosecutors who handles these types of cases. They work by reviewing the video, reviewing all of the records, and making sure that they're ready to testify. That requires extra work. And so as a result, in 2023, there was approximately $3,300, to be specific, $3,341 in overtime that was expended. So far this year, $1,221 of overtime has been expended. And this request seeks, if you were to approve this request, it seeks an additional $8,160 in salary per year. And because Benton County is only responsible for 41%, that's a little more than $3,000. It's about $3,600. So we are currently on track, if you were to deny this request, we are currently on track to have the expenditure for this position exceed what the expenditure would be if you were to grant the request. I think it's important for you to understand just a little bit about the history on this request. So in January of 2023.
Clarify one.
Yes, sir.
All the last year, the overtime was 3,000?
3,341.
And already in the 1 month this year, she's already had 1,000 in overtime?
1,221.
Make sure I understand.
Yes, and that's training, trials, late night responses, and trial preparation. Okay. Is typically what falls into that overtime category. So in January 2023, I picked up where my predecessor left off and started a conversation with administration about this request. We sought reclassification of this position along with five non-bargaining supervisors. Since that time, I've had a number of conversations with administration and human resources. And in the meantime, as you both know, as all three of you know, the county passed a moratorium on reclassifications. I'm making this request very aware of that moratorium. However, it was after that moratorium that I was asked by administration to obtain soft commitments from all the cities. So if you review the packet, you should have seen responses from each one of the police chiefs indicating that they can't 100% commit for their councils, but they can give a soft commitment after talking to their managers to indicate that they would support this reclassification. And this has been scheduled before the board twice, and for various reasons, it's been canceled. This request is not to ask for anything new. It is not to ask for anything additional. This request is simply to maintain historical funding for the position. It was funded at a level identical to a deputy prosecutor one from 2000 to 2019. 2019, Deputy Prosecutor 1 was moved to a grade 16. 2022, it was moved to a grade 19. This position, if we were to lose Ms. Merstig, will prove incredibly difficult to fill. The request is essentially $300 more per month would be Benton County's obligation. With the exception of Franklin County, all the other jurisdictions have indicated their approval and their support. As I said, we're not asking for anything to change. We're asking to maintain what was decided many years ago. And as a part of this, I had the privilege of looking through an old folder for this position. It's kind of fun to find out the history. And this is a salary request statement that was entered into in July of 2000 by Max Bennett, Leo Bowman, and Claude Oliver. And it determined, based on the seriousness of the work and the level of skill and training that's required, that grade 15 placement that was the same placement as a DPA 1 was the appropriate placement. I'm asking the board to simply recognize this has already been decided and to maintain that current level of funding. This is something that Benton County has a unique responsibility for the all of the cities. All of the cities utilize Mari Merstig for their interviews, and they're counting on Benton County to manage this position. Thank you.
Question. So I got it. So on the, I'm just curious, how come it wasn't like always going up and equaling that other, like when 2020 or when it happened, when she got hired and she was equaling that other person, how come it wasn't going up with that other person's grade? You know what I mean? Like, cause yeah. I get it. Like, and the problem is too, that my concern is with us doing the county study, it'd be great to, I mean, is the county study possibly June or July or?
Carly's.
Sure. Because, you know what I'm saying? Like, because there's been other departments have been asked, or other groups or agencies, however you call them, have been asking for raises too, but we've been kind of, you know, putting that moratorium on it because we're waiting for that study to come out. So I guess my question is it possible to, you know, okay, she's at a, what's she at right now?
Grade 15.
So what if we bumped her up to a grade 16 or 17 right now, and then postpone it and wait until we get the study back? Because, you know, I mean, like, it just opens a can of worms for one departments we've already said no to, and or we're putting the moratorium on. Go ahead.
No, you're fine, Commissioner. The county compensation study is underway. We are working on gathering position information, you know, to include updating this job description to meet the current qualifications, as it does not reflect that. It hasn't been updated over the years. We do anticipate that we will have that county compensation study wrapped up and the findings delivered the end of June, early July at the latest at this point.
Because I see her, like, I appreciate your presentation too, because I was unaware of the stuff that she does. And so I do understand her importance, but at the same time, obviously my concern, the can of worms that it opens up if we're saying yes and then it's we said no to other departments.
If I could respond to that point, Commissioner. So
Mr. Eisinger, I do have a couple of questions before that too. So if you just hold on with me with your thought process for 1 second, I appreciate it. Because I do have a bunch of questions before you, because I know you went on a long time. So I'd like to go ahead and talk a little bit too and ask some questions as well. But if you could hold on just for a sec, that'd be great. And Chairman Delvin, when you're ready, I have some questions too.
Go ahead.
Okay, so since the reason why I wanted to stop just for a second, because I see Carly, our HR manager, up there sitting down. Carly, I know we've talked a lot, and so a couple things. So we're looking at June, so we're looking at 3-4 months down the road potentially for us to have our wage and compensation analysis done. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Perfect. And at the very beginning, when I came on to the Board of Commissioners, I think it's 3-4 months into it, I had a meeting with senior staff, our county administrator, deputy administrator, and you were involved at that meeting as well. And I told you, and I just want to be transparent to the public, we had a very high level conversation, and I said there was things I was potentially having to vote on that I didn't feel comfortable on, because we were giving a small group of individuals raises here, and then we would, a couple months later, or we're going to give another because of consequences of having this give this group raises, we had to give this group raises. And I asked everybody, did they think that was sustainable? And the overwhelming response, I believe, in that meeting was no. And so I brought up a wage and compensation study analysis to go ahead and see where we would stand with all employees with Benton County. And so to me, and I'm going to go a little bit further than this. I think this is an important thing. I know we had a county prosecutor, and Mr. Eisinger is very good. It's almost like he was over there in court doing his case. And I totally respect 100% of him supporting his staff. But on the HR side, and I do have more comments, but on the HR side, Carly, where do you stand on this? And I don't mean to put you on the spot, because we heard the importance of the position, and that's fine and dandy, but that's not going to change. The interviews are still going to go on, and people will still see their day, and the child forensic interviewer is still going to do the job. But where do you stand on this on the HR side? Do you mind if I ask you?
No, of course you can ask me. Mr. Eisinger and I have had extensive conversation about this, so I don't think it's a surprise to him that I have concerns about approving this as a one-off reclassification when we are in the midst of addressing these issues countywide. I think, you know, I appreciate that this position is somewhat uniquely situated within the prosecutor's office in that, you know, the majority of the prosecutor's office have, you know, seen wage increases over the last 18 months. However, if you look countywide, the prosecutor's office is an anomaly in that most offices have not experienced that, and certainly non-bargaining employees in those positions, we have a number of positions that have not kept up with the market, which is the exact reason that the, you know, the Board of Commissioners has approved the, you know, the expense and the time of completing a countywide compensation study to get those, you know, get everything aligned. I think the ask is based on tradition, not necessarily the market data. And it, you know, it could be that this position should be above a, you know, deputy prosecutor. I don't know until we, you know, get that data. So, you know, because we are in the midst of this and we are so close, I do have concerns with going back to approving one-off reclassifications within our current structure.
No, and I appreciate that. So I'll go a little bit further, because I see Amanda, one of the managers over there in from district court. And I remember earlier on last year, I had a meeting with the district court judges, and they had staff they wanted to go ahead and give raises to. I've had that concern with other departments and other departments requesting the same thing. So it's been, and they understood the wage and compensation study. So a lot of them held tight on that. They understand what that entails. And so I know that, you know, I want to say, and hopefully, Mr. Eisinger, you'll agree. We're both very big time Boy Scouts. We like to do the right thing. I support you 100%. I respect you supporting your staff and wanting to get them where they should be. Unfortunately, before we both got into office, I don't know why this was already hadn't been addressed. It should have been. But I know that I respect you on doing that. I had senior staff. We had that conversation, a meeting. I brought that out and rolled that out to our one of our public commissioner, Board of Commissioner meetings. Both commissioners agreed that we should do that and approve the wage and compensation analysis. But I'm also a Boy Scout. I know that you're supporting your staff, but here's my issue with it. We did this to go ahead and improve recruitment, retention, and to save taxpayers' money in the midterm, long term. So this is a good thing. I know I've had a lot of departments ask us to do the same thing. It's currently underway. I know that I know that you were talking about all the important things interviewer does. That's not going to stop. Those things are still going to go on. I spoke to a lot of the police chiefs and law enforcement and some of the mayors myself. They're in support of this, but we're so close to this. If I, as a Boy Scout myself, and I consider myself having high morals, values, and standards, since I'm the one who kind of brought this to the Board of Commissioners for this wage and compensation analysis, if I go ahead and approve this, I would be breaking my policies, procedures, and rules that I requested we put in place for this moratorium, and I can't do that. So I'm kind of on a rock and a hard place, something I would like to do. I can't, because then I feel that I would be breaking policies that we put in place for the betterment of the 600 some odd employees we have at the county, as well as, I don't know what this position should be compensated for. That's the whole reason for this wage and compensation study. I think that our HR manager said the same thing. Once we have that in place, 3 or 4 months down the road, I would be happy to go ahead and do that. It could be more, it could be the same, it could be less. But that's why we put this in place. It's a thing that's valuable to the taxpayers. It's a valuable thing to our employees to see if there's, let's say I know from another area I came from, there was employees that were about 32% undercompensated. We brought them up to a new wage. So I understand your passion for it. I understand you were selling, and it was a hard press on saying that what this position entails and with how that person helps these children get to where they need to do and help them. They help them out, Parrish. She helps them out. But once again, those interviews are still going to go on. That work's still going to go on. I hope that that person stays strong and then waits for a few more months, and then we can go ahead and do this. And it's fair for all the employees across the board, and all the departments have requested the same thing. So I totally get it, but I'm going to have to say I can't break my rules once I put them in place. So I'm going to, just to let you know, Mr. Eisinger, support 100%, support your supporting your staff. But because we have that in place, I'm going to have to say I'm a no when we vote. Thank you.
Did you want to respond?
Yes, I'd like an opportunity to respond to Mr. McKay's question. So 24 years ago, there was a decision that was made that this position would be placed to grade 15. And that happened after a workshop that addressed all the details of the position and an appropriate placement. What happened in 2019 was we started to experience difficulty hiring prosecutors. And so there was a one-off decision made to move a DPA-1, which is an entry-level prosecutor, from a 15 to 16. And then we've continued to experience those issues, as you know, with both prosecutors and public defense attorneys, which resulted in 2022 moving it from a 16 to a 19. The problem that this creates is that this position is now being outpaced by positions in the community, like CPS investigators, require substantially less experience. There's a face-to-face conversation with a child every day who's disclosing terrible acts committed against them. And there's one person in the room who was here to deal with it, and it's Mari Merstead. And she's dealing with it not only for Benton County, she's dealing with it for the city of Kennewick, the city of Richland, West Richland, all of the communities in this county and Franklin County. And I would ask that you take into consideration the background of these requests. Again, there's been more groundwork on this with administration than and human resources than, frankly, any other request in the last year that I've had. So I hope that answers your question. Yeah. If it does not, I'm happy to answer anything further. Yeah.
Well, I think, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but was it 19 was the last year it was brought up?
Correct.
What was this delay until now? You have a history of that.
Actually, so the funding was the same from 2000 to 2019. And then in 2019, DPA one went from 15 to a 16. And then in 2022, it went from 16 to 19. So for those 19 years, they had, from the inception of the position, they had that same funding level.
But
if that answers your question.
It didn't. Her position didn't bump up when those other positions bumped up.
That's correct. And that's because, again, it was taken as the prosecutor request was taken as just a one-off request to increase prosecutor funding. The job description, for instance, for the child forensic interviewer is the original job description. So the position has.
So it didn't keep up back in.
It did not.
Okay.
Correct.
That was. Well, let me say. I'll comment now. I appreciate the work you do. Because I used to be on the board. My wife used to be on the SART board for many years, and so I appreciate that work. It's not easy. My law enforcement career, I had several of those child sex abuse. Had one young woman turned herself in to me, who was being exploited by her father. You may remember the case, but it all came down to she wasn't allowed to have a hamburger one day, and she walked into the Richland police station at night, and there I was. And so got to deal with all that pretty sick stuff. But so it's not an easy job. I appreciate that. I hope that you can understand where we're at with this study that we've got going on that's way overdue, that was way overdue in the county. And Carly has come, when she came to Benton County, that was one thing she pointed out, that we hadn't had one of these. And when Commissioner Alvarez came on board, he understood that too, as I think we did. So I hope you understand that we're trying to work through this process. And, it's nothing against you personally, or, it's just that we don't want to open up a floodgate here, because I know my wife would hear about it tonight to make an exception. And so I hope you'll, bear with us so we get through this and start addressing some of these inequities. And I'm not sure why it didn't keep up. You didn't keep up with the entry of prosecutors. We don't know that. I don't know that. So, but it sounds like there's not a consensus right now to move this forward, Mr. Eisner and Marcy. So, with that, any other comments, gentlemen?
Go ahead, Simon. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Michael.
So, Mr. Eisner, I totally respect you for stepping up to the plate to support your staff. I do the same thing. And I want to do this, but because we've had discussions on this and I've struggled with it 100%, but I had to think about this long-term with all the different departments. And I know this is a good thing we put in place. It's way overdue, I think. Commissioner Delvin said that this hasn't been done since the mid-90s, so we're catching up. This will be a good thing. And I want this person to have everything that position should have, but let's give it a few more months and let's do it right. And I'll feel good about it. I can't break that policies that we put in place. I felt so strong about that. I was seeing that things were being done. We could have improved. So I appreciate the time. I appreciate the passion, and we'll get this done sooner or later, and hopefully sooner. And I think we'll get that done for you. So I appreciate the time.
Yeah, I'll just pretty much ditto what he said. I mean, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm glad you're in the position you are and stuff. So I just hope you understand the tough situation we're in of having to postpone this and just wait a couple of months and try to make it a 911 for the whole county to get this study so we can get it all figured out. So.
Did you turn the heat up in here before you came?
I did not. I just presented something here. I was passionate about.
Yeah. Well, no. Honestly, that's why I'm excited you're in where you're in, because I really do appreciate what you're doing. And again, I think the county commissioners, a lot of the elected officials in the county are really making the county run like a business and stuff. And so, again, I respect what you're doing and everything. And hopefully in the next couple months, we can get this made right.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. You want to just stay up there and do your other business thing?
I'll just have another one.
I think Mr. Brown's going to take
that. Oh, he's going to take that?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Give him the easy.
Oh, is that the other business?
The other business.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Morning, gentlemen.
Relocation expense, or what yeah. you call it?
As you know, Mr. Hallstrom recently retired, and we're trying to fill that labor and employment position, important position in our office in the county. We're currently going through applications, application process. We've got the last one tomorrow, so we haven't made any decisions, but we have a promising applicant that's currently living in Alaska. And just the way your process works and where the county policy is on that relocation assistance, you're supposed to have that authorization before you make an offer. And so we wanted to come and get authorization to do that now. So we've got that ready in case we decide that applicant is the person that we want to make the offer to.
There's policy has a limit or something?
$5,000, yeah, $5,000 in moving expenses. She's in Alaska. She's basically doing the same work Mr. Hallstrom does for the county. She's doing that for the city of Anchorage.
Tired of the cold, huh?
Yeah, I guess
maybe
so.
Possibly. You want to make a motion?
So that $5,000 is in the budget.
Yeah, that comes out of
our
budget.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, we've had so many vacancies, have difficulty hiring. We've already, Steve Hallstrom's position wasn't paid in January. Our other civil deputy position has been vacant for 7 or 8 months. So we can use money from there to make up for that. Yeah. If we decide to go that way.
Now, I'm actually surprised it's only $5,000. I thought it'd be, I think for the Ben Franklin Health District, it was like $7,000 or $8,000 or something.
Right. Your policy might be for 2008,
yeah.
So it may not have kept.
Yeah.
$5,000 in 2008 is not the same as $5,000 in 2024.
I don't know how she does that. I don't know how she lived in Alaska. Watching National Geographic, like those people live in Alaska. Holy moly, it's cold.
So you want to make a motion then?
So I would move
that the.
How about you make
the
motion?
Board,
we've got a resolution. We got it right there.
That the Board of County Commissioners. Oh.
Make one up on the fly.
Trying to make it easy for you.
See, if they fall apart when I'm not there.
Okay, so I move to approve the Board of County Commissioners in the matter of authorizing the prosecuting attorney to reimburse Megan Carmichael up to $5,000 for a relocating expense per the county's relation expense policy resolution 08534.
And so for the Benton County Prosecutor's Office, I strongly second this.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve up to $5,000 for employee relocation expenses. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those
aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
Any other business?
You know, I just want to discuss about that gentleman in Finley. I don't know what, I mean, again, it's crazy for me working, I have jobs through the Tri-Cities and I don't know if there's something that we should talk to the Sheriff's Department about or what, because, I'm in the city of Kennewick or city of Richland and there's deputies, in the city limits when they should be in the rural area, and stuff. And so it was, again, I'm glad that he came out from Finley to bring up this concern because, I mean, Finley is a long ways, but again, we should have deputies out there and stuff. So I don't know if there's something that staff we can look into some type of study or just if we can sit down with the sheriff individually or how we can make something work. But
well, I think Commissioner Alvarez had a good point there that maybe we have the sheriff come and explain the staff.
There you go. Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Come have it to us a word when people are stationed and staffed.
Well, I'll bring up one little story. The coming home from volleyball, bringing my kid across Blue Bridge, get to Clearwater, 395, there's three police officers chasing this individual going towards the Gold Gym from the new Popeyes. And I'm like, holy cow, they're chasing them. And they looked really tired. And so then I swung around and helped. I jumped out and was able to apprehend the gentleman. He was a small guy. But, my daughter was like, no, Dad, don't do it. I'm like, well, the officers chased him all the way from the Dairy Queen. So they chased him pretty much like for 2 miles. And, so we got him apprehended and there's two or three deputies that showed up too. And I was kind of confused because, it wasn't a gun shooting. It wasn't, nothing malicious, whatever. But the guy was stealing from Dairy Queen. And so that's why, I guess, when he brought that up in Finley, that story of mine popped up. And also, again, driving around and seeing deputies pulling over a high school kid I saw down by Southridge High School one time on Union Street. I'm like, why are the deputies pulling people over instead of the police officers or something? So
at least you didn't hit them with their truck.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I agree. I think it would be great.
So maybe we can get the sheriff to come in and give a presentation coming weeks. Sometime let him prepare. Commissioner Alvarez, any other business?
No, I think just ditto. I think Commissioner McKay made some good points and stuff like that. And I think we're the ones who are funding the different levels of staffing for the sheriff's office. So it'd be great to go ahead and see those zones and see how they're manned and stuff during the day and evening and the early hours to make sure that public safety is being done the way that we should be done. And so it'd be a great presentation, good educational thing for us to go ahead and learn. As we're moving forward and trying to make a better, robust public safety system within the county on a regional basis. Other than that, no, I'm good to go. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, thank you. Anything? Any other elected in Kennewick? Josie, are you still there? No?
She's gone.
You gone. Brenda there? Apparently I missed Brenda sitting in there last week. I didn't see. Brenda's not sitting in there. Okay, with that, we do have an executive session. Chief, 3 minutes? We'll go 3 minutes for review qualifications of an applicant for public employment. With that, we'll go at ease.
And time is 10:21.
And the only action maybe take on this afterwards. If you want to hang around, you're all welcome to. Jim, you're welcome to.
And state the time, Commissioner, sorry.
Oh, okay. We'll go into executive session now at my computer says 10:21. And we're at 10:24 and no decisions were made at that in the executive session. Commissioner McKay.
Oh, do we need to make a motion on that?
Yeah.
Do I have it?
No.
I was going to say, I can't click on the clicker
thing. You can make up something, you know? Be good at this.
Oh, here it is. Thank you, Chief. All right, I move to approve the salary request form as presented for Charles Reynolds.
I'll second that.
Second, we have a second. Mr. Alvarez, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes. Anything else for the good of the order? Anything? No. With that, we're adjourned.